Welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Darren Hefty. I'm broadcasting from just outside the Morton studio today. I've been out looking at a really interesting project going on down in Nebraska. Yep. In the coming months here, working to help turn around a farm that's been damaged by some floodwaters, and really excited to begin working on that project to see what we can do. It's pretty productive ground with some really good folks, and just down checking that out today. So I'm just on my way back into the studio. It's Farmer Friday on our show today, and like every Friday, we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. If you'd like to talk about what's going on in your farm, if you would like to chat about any agronomic topic, our phone lines again are 1-844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can catch us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Darren Hefty. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Yeah, the floodwaters are up in our area, and traveling down and back from Nebraska, certainly seeing a lot of floodwaters along the Missouri River, which many of the acres that are impacted right now weren't planted, but unfortunately, some of the acres that farmers battled all year to get in and to take care of, now they're underwater too. And boy, there's more. I hate to tell the guys in Nebraska and further south, but there's more waters coming. We've had heavy rains up in the Dakotas, especially South Dakota, and a lot of flooding on our own farm as well. That's going to be moving south here. Waters are back out about as high as they were in the spring of 2019. It's been quite a treat, no doubt about that. But in the meantime, there are some good crops out there as well. There's still some things happening in fields, and it's going to be interesting to see as harvest plays out. There's some corn that's starting to get a little bit close in some areas, and soybeans still with a ways to go, but the corn harvest could begin in just the next couple of weeks here in some areas, which will be really fun to see what some of the good areas are going to yield this year. I've already heard some yield estimates and yield results coming in from different parts of the country that are really promising. But certainly there's some areas out there that yields are going to be a little disappointing this year, but just thankful to have some crop at all.
All right, I'm back in the studio. Wow, this is an interesting transition today with Brian out and about doing the show solo here. And I made my sister a little nervous. My sister Janelle's our producer today. And she said, what time will you be back? I said, oh, probably 2 o'clock even. Well, it turns out it's 2:03. So I made it. I was pretty close to getting back in studio on time. On Farmer Friday today, going to be talking to people around the country. I know we've got a few farmers that wanted to call in today, and we'd love to hear from you as well, because it is so variable out there from area to area and all the things that we're dealing with. One of them that has come up now this last week, I was down in north central Iowa and southeast Minnesota, among other places, and there's a disease in corn called Physoderma that we're seeing more of. We haven't seen much of this disease as we go further north and west from there, but in the central part of the Corn Belt, this is something that's been dealt with for a while. So in some areas, this is what's fun about agriculture. In some areas, you see certain problems and everybody kind of gets used to, oh yeah, we have that, here's how we deal with it. But then other areas think, well, we don't have that here, we don't have to prepare for it. Well, diseases move around and bugs move around, and the same kinds of problems that farmers are facing in other parts of the country, now the guys in north central Iowa are starting to see it, and even southeast Minnesota. We've seen some of this Physoderma stretching out into South Dakota and Nebraska as well. When you look at corn stalks, if you see something that doesn't look right, meaning it's not green and we still got a ways to go with our crop, do a little investigating. Split some stalks open, dig up some roots, and see what's going on down there. Many times we're seeing these purplish-colored dots down the sides of corn stalks, and sometimes they'll congregate right around a node, and many times that's Physoderma. We've got an app that you can download for free if you're saying, I don't know much about that particular disease, but maybe I've got something else that looks kind of similar. You can download the free AgPhD Corn Diseases app. something we put together with the American Phytopathological Society. I love saying that word. It's such a big word. And basically, we're working with pathologists, plant pathologists at a number of land-grant universities and some of the top people in the country and around the world to put together information about these different diseases that we're seeing. It's probably one of my bigger concerns as we go into harvest that with all the wet conditions we've had and stressful conditions in some areas, it was extreme wet, and then it got extreme dry, and now we're getting wet again. When we have those extremes, plants get sick, for lack of a better term. We see more diseases starting to show up, especially around the crown and around the stalk itself. And if you've got some of those diseases, it's important to keep an eye on it and see, where are you at? Is this going to compromise stalk integrity, where I need to step my harvest up a little bit? Just chatting with a farmer down in Nebraska, and he said, well, where I'm taking my grain, as long as it's under 25, they're going to take it. They're hungry for the corn, and they're just going to make it work. Well, if you've got those kinds of opportunities in your area where you can harvest that crop a little bit earlier, or if you're set up to dry corn, like we are on our farm, we'll often start at 25% moisture and get rolling out in the fields. This is probably going to be one of those years that's a great idea. And here's another thing. My brother is quite the planner. He always he's already got his list, I'm sure, of where we're going to harvest first and so forth. But that list is going to get checked by me coming up here pretty shortly as we walk fields again, as we get a little closer to harvest, to say, you know what? I don't like the stalks in this particular field. Let's move it up in the harvest order. Even though, you know, maybe a point or two wetter than some other fields, it's more important that we get that crop out before you take the chance of a windstorm coming and things laying on the ground. All right, it's Farmer Friday on our show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We're also taking questions on Twitter, AgPHD Media, or Darren Hefty. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We've got a number of emails we're going to try to get to a little bit later on in this show as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You got in the field. Well done. That wasn't an easy task this year. Now give your bean crop everything it needs to get the job done this season. Adding Agro Liquid Fertilizer to post-emerge spraying passes provides your soybeans with the nutrients needed when the plant reaches the reproductive stage. Foliar feeding soybeans can provide the in-season edge you need to economically and efficiently boost yield potential. We can help you develop a successful nutrition program for your soybeans. To learn more, visit agroliquid.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We didn't get to the moon by accepting that man can't fly, and we sure didn't get the car by settling for the horse. Progress isn't driven by accepting things as they are. It's driven by asking questions. At Indigo, we're working with farmers to question the entire agriculture system, to reimagine everything from soil to sale. Yeah, we like the big projects. Go to indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo, from questions we grow.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got JD on the line with us right now up in Michigan. How's it going, JD?
Oh, it's going great. Hey, my question is, about 3 weeks ago, I planted some alfalfa, timothy, orchard grass, and a little bit of rye. And I notice I'm getting a lot of thistle up. and, you know, it's just starting to come up. What could I use to get rid of the thistle, or do I need to wait until my other stuff matures more, my alfalfa and that?
Well, that's a real challenge. I don't have a herbicide solution for you. If you would spot spray and go out with something that would target that, boy, there's a lot of choices, I guess, but I don't have anything that I could spray that won't kill one of those things in your mix. Now, if you said I could just spray right on the thistle itself, you know, we could go with Roundup and kill a little spot right around that thistle, but that would kill everything. Or you could say, well, yeah, I'm going to use a 2,4-D type product. That's going to kill the alfalfa off. Boy, anything else I think about, Stinger and other herbicides, we're gonna kill the alfalfa if we're gonna kill the thistle. So if it's spread out over a broad area, if you wanna, I don't know how much money you spent on the alfalfa, but if you wanted to just say, you know what, I guess I'm not gonna have the alfalfa, I'm just gonna have the grass blend, you could go out and broadcast something to kill thistles if it's that big a problem.
But kill my alfalfa.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Okay. I noticed in my buddy's pasture, he had thistle for his first cutting, and then his second cutting, I mean, no thistle come up. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Do you think that it choked it all out, the alfalfa and all the other grasses?
Boy, that would be great if that would be the case. That'd be the ideal. I wouldn't bank on that, but if that happens, that would be fantastic. The other thing that I've seen some guys do, especially if it's bull or musk thistle that will outgrow everything else out there, so they'll be taller, I've seen some guys put Roundup in a wick, which is basically a rope, a soaked rope filled with Roundup that you just drive through on the back of a four-wheeler or a tractor or whatever, and you just brush it up one side, brush it down the other. And we used to do that way back in the day when we didn't have Roundup Ready crops, and try and target some of those weeds that got tall. You could sure do that as well, but I'd be nervous.
And what do you use for that?
Well, if you use a wick system, you could look up a wick for a, mm-hmm. You know, you'd have to have a tank and something, a tractor, which is what we used to use, or a four-wheeler or something, and then drive through and have that basically brush on the herbicide onto the weed. That would be an alternative as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks, JD.
Yeah,
sorry.
Have a great day.
Sorry, I didn't have any better answer for you. That gets to be a tough challenge in mixed crops like that. And alfalfa is a tough one. Alfalfa is a tough crop. Even if it was straight alfalfa, I don't really have a great solution for straight alfalfa trying to kill perennial weeds like that. Let's head out to Ohio. I got Brett with us in Ohio. Brett, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Well, it started off pretty good today. I was out in fields, and I caught just a little bit of news, and it sounded kind of positive for our grain markets. You know, if we could ever get this trade war settled, that could be a good thing for us as farmers.
That would make a world of difference, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, I know you've done a lot of work on the soybean board, and soybeans seem to be the target on a lot of these things. You know, I was just out with a farmer here most of the day today, and he said, man, he goes, what are you doing on these soybeans? What's my outlook for next year? Because boy, it hasn't been good this year, but we're sure hoping things get better.
Well, if I had a crystal ball, I could make everybody, I think, feel a little bit more better. But the first thing, you know, the announcement came about the tariffs being lifted on the soybeans, and that would be a fantastic if we can make that permanent coming into the trade talks here in the next month. But we also are working on getting the MCA passed and the Japan trade negotiation over. And in fact, we got a group that's going to be out next week and talk biodiesel to the RFS and things. We need to move this pile. That's what we're looking at, is moving the pile.
Yeah, that's right. That's really important. How about on your own farm, Brett? How are things looking there? I know Ohio was not an easy place to try and farm this year.
This is, you talk about the perfect storm. That's what we've had this year. We had terrible planting conditions. We did get probably 90% of the corn planted and 100% of the beans, but we were a month and a half behind on the beans and a month behind on the corn. And, you know, wet can be, as can be, all the way up until 4th July, and then Mother Nature shut the rain off. So I think we've had about an 2 inches since then. So that crops look decent 2-3 weeks ago, but we haven't had a rain at all since then, so everything's starting to die now. I had a neighbor who I just talked to that chopped ensilage there beside us last week, and I asked him just a little bit ago, I said, how did it turn out? And he says, well, we used 53 wagons to fill 3 bags, and he says they only said it was going to make 101 bushels, so that doesn't give me any hope out here, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, you know, when you look at that, are you no-till on your farm?
Yes, we use no-till, and we've been planting in the cover crops. We started that about 4 years ago with the cover crops, and have come out very well with that.
Awesome. What are you using? Are you using cereal rye, or are you doing something different?
Yes. No, cereal rye, because we're, by the time we get it planted, that's about all we can do. We have some wheat ground that we've been had some radishes and peas on, but what we have this year, we ended up double cropping beans into, because we had just finished planting beans 2 days before that, so we said, what the heck? So we went ahead and planted beans in it, but it looks like they're just going to be a cover crop. But the cereal rye is what we've been using, and we actually try to kill it early. We're trying to, and I'm putting it on both beans going to corn and corn going to beans, and so we're trying to get it killed, especially going into the corn, so we try to get out and kill it in March, but we usually get a fairly good stand and good height on it, but what we're trying to do is keep those roots there to keep that soil in place.
Yeah, that's been really important here, especially the last couple of years where a lot of the areas have been wet. You like letting that cover grow into the spring. Did that help with some of the wet conditions? Did it suck some of that early moisture out, or did the rains come later than that and it really didn't matter?
No, we've been wet since actually October of last year. It's been wet. We had a rough time getting crops out and had a rough time getting cover crop planted, but we use a vertical tillage with a cedar on top of it, and you know, so you only have to touch it lightly. We got, I end up getting probably 2/3 of the area covered last year, but we're getting, like I said, a decent height on it, and what I care about is getting the roots. And what we've seen, because I've done some strips between where we did plant and left some strips, even on some fairly flat ground, I mean 0 to 2% organic, or 2% slope at the most, and we're seeing it control the runoff even in that flat of ground.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of keys here, and I think being willing to make some changes and look at, hey, maybe I'll give this a shot for my farm. There's a lot of potential benefits here. Definitely playing out for Brett in Ohio. Brett, thank you so much. Really appreciate what you're doing with the soybean board, but appreciate what you shared about your farm as well. It's pretty interesting.
Thank you. Right. Talking to you.
You bet. Stay safe this harvest. It's coming up pretty quick, I hope, anyway. I hope we get rolling here soon. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
You got in the field. Well done. That wasn't an easy task this year. Now give your bean crop everything it needs to get the job done this season. Adding agro-liquid fertilizer to post-emerge spraying passes provides your soybeans with the nutrients needed when the plant reaches the reproductive stage. Foliar-feeding soybeans can provide the in-season edge you need to economically and efficiently boost yield potential. We can help you develop a successful nutrition program for your soybeans. To learn more, visit agroliquid.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation. Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got a couple of questions here from Edward, and I wanted to jump into that real quick here too. He said, wondering about nitrogen tie-up and carbon, and he said, I got a few questions for you. First of all, how does your soil stack up compared to Ukrainian soil? Why is Ukrainian soil so rich? I have been to Ukraine. I was there back in 2006, and yeah, it's impressive. They got some deep, deep topsoil in the central part of the country where I was at. Really nice soil. Needed some help on fertility where we were, but yeah, just flat ground, heavy black ground, and kind of reminded me of being in Iowa. So, yeah, they've got deeper topsoil there than what I do. And we can't really do a whole lot about that at this point, but we're trying to do the best with what we got. Edward's nitrogen questions, he said he put some rotted logs or wood as a mulch out into the field, tilled in 5 to 6 inches deep. Wondering about nitrogen tie-up, and then he said, if I add additional nitrogen on this carbon residue, can I avoid the carbon tie-up? Hey, thanks, Edward. You know, when you've got a high carbon source, the soil microbes need nitrogen to break that down. And in order for there to be enough nitrogen, they're going to take it from wherever they can get it to try and break those things down. So if you put on just enough for your crop, chances are you're going to run short because it's going to get tied up in that breakdown process. So yes, I would definitely be putting more nitrogen on. The other thing you could do is you could try to concentrate that nitrogen a little bit closer to where your root system is, but you can't get carried away, especially when you have lighter soils like you talked about. So yep, I definitely would be putting on a little more nitrogen and then just watching things really close through the season to see if I need to add more. Thanks for the questions. Let's head out to Western South Dakota. We've got Shannon with us right now. Shannon, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, good. Good to hear from you. How are things going out your way?
Oh, it's been kind of a struggle since spring, but I guess we made it this far. But yes, we started very late, wet, cold, snow. But we got the spring wheat in, and we're done with winter wheat harvest and spring wheat harvest, thankfully. But there's many producers that are still trying to finish some spring wheat harvest. And but the fall crop looks good. The corn and sunflowers look really good.
Outstanding. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that about the wheat. I was just up in North Dakota here a week ago, and growers up there were talking about October wheat harvest. And I said, what are you talking about? And then I saw the fields, and I thought, oh, no, that's no fun. That should be done by now.
Yeah, I know. It's a struggle for them guys, I'm sure. One of our combine crews has moved up around Bowman area, and they would like to get back. They cut wet corn in the fall in Kansas, but he said there's a lot of wheat to cut up there yet. And they've been up there when it snowed before, so that ain't fun, I'm sure.
No. No, don't even mention that S word, Shannon. We don't want to hear about that for at least a couple of months here. You know, I think about all the stuff you've been through in the last few years, and I think about harvest and safety. And so often when we're getting around harvest time, a lot of folks that call into the show say, hey, everybody stay safe out there this harvest. You know this firsthand about how things are important. Did you want to talk about that today a little bit, or do you want to talk about something else?
No, I don't care. Yeah, I'm fine to talk with you about my little accident
Okay, so when we think about grain bin safety, we get so many questions about that. And the one thing that we do get that's I would say really positive is we get a lot of questions around, okay, I've got grain bins. There's just two of us on the farm or just three of us on the farm. How do we try to maximize our safety here? Because, there's always potential issues out there.
Yeah, so that's a good way to start, I guess. Yes, usually there's two guys. I would never look at bins by yourself. We do have a lot of temperature cables in our bins that we can go around and check temperatures, but whenever a guy's gonna get in a bin, I definitely think a guy should have two people there. And there's been many people that we try to get grain out and it gets hung up, and we try to get it out, and bad things can happen. But, I don't know what the real takeaway is to be exact. I would definitely want two people there, not have the auger on, and hopefully before you take any grain out, to check your bin, because we've kind of made it a point before we take any grain out of the bin to get in it, check it, make sure there's no chunks on top, because you get a little snow that blows in, and it sets on the grain and it gets to grow a little bit and it gets moldy or whatever, and then when you start to take your grain out, well, it plugs that center sump, and that's kind of what we did. And but that's I don't know, one of them deals.
Yeah, you talk about that, and I look at this year with some of the variable conditions out in so many fields. There's going to be a lot of moisture difference out there. It's going to be a challenging year to store grain and do it well. I mean, even if you've got a grain dryer, if you've got some coming in 5 points different than other parts of the, same truckload, how do you do that just right? And you're right, you end up with some issues up there, and you make a great point. If you've got temperature cables and that's awesome, but it doesn't mean you aren't ever going to have a problem. And when you do, a guy's just got to be safe about this thing. And, I know that on your farm, you had an issue with this. Fortunately, it turned out okay. But boy, it does make me nervous, because I think about you every time I go by a bin, and I think about what you've told me and what you went through. And, if you've got two people there, how do you do it? Do you tie a cable off with the guy that's in the bin? Do you have some equipment handy to get around a person if they get where the grain starts filling in around them? Or how do you do it?
So I think, I haven't really been in too many bins since my accident, but before my accident, we knew we was going to have trouble with this bin. So we had bought they're like climbing harnesses, for climbing, and at like Shields or somewhere I'd bought them. And That day I went to the bin, we bought just some old rope. But I would definitely advise, if you're going to be in an enclosed structure with grain that had been taken out and you know there could be a problem, yes, you should have two. I'd say three would be better, especially if there's going to be trouble with that bin. You know, we'd looped the through my harness and went up to the roof, and we went through where our temperature cable hung is what we put the rope through and brought the rope back to the edge. And I had one guy in there with me, and of course I didn't explain myself too good to the guy with me, and I don't hold any resentment to him, but you know, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I told Jeremy, I told him to give me some more. He had me pulled up really tight where I couldn't even walk. I couldn't get around. Well, I told him, Jeremy, I need some more slack so I can walk around up here to see, to either knock some off. And it wasn't 10, 15 seconds later that it collapsed on me. And I think the rope slid, you know, out of his hand, and I was gone. He said he turned around and I was gone. So, but I would definitely advise to have a couple people, two or three, make sure you got a good tie-off point. And, you know, don't give them too much slack. I know that's what I wanted, but I think you'd be, you know, because if it caves away, you've got to be able to support your weight, you know.
Right, right.
It's just a crazy deal.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, you know, as we fill bins this fall, and as some guys are still emptying bins too, it's just so important to be thinking about these things and be prepared on your farm. And I get it. It's an extra job. It's so much easier when you can just do things yourself. But this is that one thing that you really don't want to do yourself, just in case something ever goes wrong. Well, Shannon,
yeah, that's the problem we find most is, you know, that snow in the winter can blow in around the bins and you get a little moisture in there. It sets for a few weeks and the sun shines on it, warms it, and then it melts, you know, and then it turns to ice, and you get a chunk of frozen stuff.
And I'm concerned this year, too, again, like I say, with just the unevenness of this crop as we put it in. We've been talking with Shannon in South Dakota about just grain bin safety. Shannon, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, and I'm so glad that you're still around to share that story. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Foliar sprays are only effective if you can get applied product into the plant. Nutex EDA is a micronutrient-based additive that delivers the foliar absorption boost you've been looking for. Nutex EDA supports rapid penetration and translocation of both nutrients and systemic crop protection within plants. Research trials have shown a 10 to 20% increase in nutrient absorption and higher tissue levels for a longer period, resulting in higher yields. Use Nutex EDA this season with all your foliar applications.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side.
so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Really excited to talk to you and take your calls at 844-44-AG-PHD. Lots going on out in the country. And you know what? As you travel around the country, different things going on in different areas, of course. Got Jed with us down in Kentucky right now. Jed, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Darren.
So what's happening down your way?
Well, harvest started well into harvest. We're about a third of the way done with our corn crop this year, and everything's looking pretty good.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, we haven't turned a wheel up here yet. We got a little ways to go before we're ready. What would you say about yields? Are you happy with yields? Are they above average? Are they about what you expected?
Well, actually, we're running about average. Some of the farms have been a little bit below, and some of them a little bit above. But overall, we're having a good harvest so far, and sustainability looks good on the corn crop, and overall very well. Just y'all may be needing some heating units up there, but we are very hot down here, ready for it to go off.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we actually have a warm week coming up here, so I know guys up here are pretty happy. But yeah, when you're harvesting grain and it's really, really warm out, you got some different challenges than when it's 40 degrees up here late October and we're pulling corn out. So, you know, as you're getting working on this corn, what are you seeing for moisture? Is it dried down well? Do you guys dry grain after you harvest it?
Yes, we will dry. We've essentially dried every bushel so far this year. We started when it was around 24-25%. Now we're running into some lighter planted corn, so our moisture has gone back up a little. But we're still maintaining around a 20% moisture.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, it's a lot of work. People here that are people that are listening that aren't necessarily farmers are like, okay, so they're at harvest. Talk to us about how things go, Jed. What's the process in your farm? Do you run a grain cart? Do you have a lot of different guys running trucks? Do you bin your own stuff? Do you haul it to town? What's your story?
Well, on our farm, I farm with my father, as a lot of farmers, young farmers do. And I have my own setup, grain system set up, and my father has his own. So one day we'll work on his dryer and fill in his capacity of his wet tank, and then the next day we'll fill mine. We kind of bounce back and forth from that until we're either run into dry corn or run out of corn.
Okay.
We run a combine. We'll run two combines and an auger cart for that as well.
Yeah, it gets to be a lot of work, a lot of labor, and you mentioned the dryers. Do you end up running some pretty short nights trying to keep an eye on things as you're drying overnight?
Yes, we always. That's always an issue. We've done some upgrades here in the last couple of years, and it hasn't been as complicated as it has in the past.
You know, when you look at your other crops, Jed, how far off are soybeans and other things in your area?
Well, earlier planted soybeans, we're probably a week and a half off from starting to go through them. Now, our beans that we have fallen wheat, they're still very green and actually needing to rain now. So we're at least, I would say, a month and a half off the harvest of those.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of, it's probably not a bad deal. You get to spread out your harvest here just a little bit with different crops getting ready at different times. What happens to this corn ground after you're done? Do you put in a cover crop? Do you do some tillage? Do you start working on fertility? Well, what's the next for this particular field you're in?
Well, in the past, a lot of acres have gone to winter wheat, but I think this year we're going to cut a lot of that out. So we'll be able to do some waterway work will be one of the things that we'll do, some fertility work, and we'll go into that, and we will sow some cover crops in some erosion, highly erodible areas of our field.
You know, that's one thing, too, that we hear from a lot of our non-farm listeners. They're like, okay, you talk to farmers, they're out doing work, and as soon as they're getting work done, then they have more work. And it just seems to be never ending. Now, of course, you do get winter in Kentucky. You don't go 12 months out of the year in the fields, do you?
No, we're out normally from December to March, to the 1st of March.
Yep. So you get a little bit of a break, and guess what happens in the break for our non-farm listeners? More work. Then it's work on equipment and work on planning for the next crop and so forth. But you know, probably the most fun work, at least for me anyway, is harvest, because you get to see, okay, how did this crop finally go, and what's it going to yield, and how's it going to turn out? So it's kind of fun to talk to somebody that's getting to do that already. We're talking to Jed down in Kentucky. Jed, stay safe this harvest, and thanks for calling. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. You too.
Let's head down to Texas. We got our friend Wade Cowan with us. Past president of the American Soybean Association. Wade, are you calling because there's some decent trade news for a change, or are you just calling to check in?
I guess I'm just calling to check in because you get every rumor every other day on the trade war, don't you?
Yes. So what's happening in Texas?
I still think it'll get fixed, but I just don't know when.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat with you. I think they'll get it fixed too, because we need it. They need it. I mean, around the world, we need to have a fair trade. No doubt about that.
On that deal, I've been to China somewhere between 8 and 10 times, and every time I've ever been over there, it was to talk to them about something they were doing that was to our detriment, whether it was technology, approving our technology, or not following phytosanitary rules. I mean, everything in the world. And so I'm all for fixing this, because I've been over there too many times, and it's the same song and dance every time. So I want it fixed just like you. So.
Yep, I
agree. Put my 2 cents worth in.
You know, I was talking to a farmer yesterday, Wade, and he had an interesting thought, and I agree with him on this. Maybe I'm wrong, and he's wrong too, but he said, you know, it seems like it's going to be a challenge when the mindset of the leaders in one country is completely different than the mindset of the leaders in the other. Do you see kind of the same thing?
Well, they have a different mindset, but it's, you know, I've seen that same kind of mindset years ago when we were dealing with Mexico. And, you know, for all its bad things, NAFTA helped that change of mind. And, you know, if we can get USMCA on across the line, it helps. I mean, you do get that common good of the trade. And, you know, when everybody starts playing fair, then there's not that, there's really an animosity when you're not playing both sides by the same rules. And we don't have that anymore. Like, man, when I was a kid growing up, we had all kinds of animosity between us and the Mexican buyers and stuff, and we don't have that anymore. So I think China gets fixed the same way, because once you get to a level playing field, everybody's not looking over their shoulder saying, what's he doing to me this time?
Yeah, that's a great point. Okay, Wade, let's switch back to your farm here just a little bit. Where are the crops at right now? What stage, and what are you working on next?
Well, we lost our corn early. We lost our early beans. We've got a little bit of late beans. But we had a lot of rain early, and for the first time in years, we had, you know, adequate subsoil moisture. And the little bit of grapes we got are making double what they've ever made before, and watermelons are good. I actually had a field that made 3.5 times normal yield the other day that I couldn't believe. So when you got adequate moisture, you know, it seems like things work a lot better. Peanuts are progressing. We're late on cotton. We're late, like I guess all the country is, and cotton's probably going to be November this year in my part of the world before we get to any of the good cotton. We've got some that burned up, some dry land, but overall, I'd say, you know, we're very blessed so far, and we're very optimistic about what we got coming up.
Excellent, excellent. When you talk about that being late with the cotton, we're a long ways north of you, and everything's just been a couple of weeks behind. Is that how far behind are you from normal with the cotton?
Probably 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably 3 weeks to a month. It was just slow to get it in, and then we were so cool. Cotton is so much of its growth is dependent on heat units, and
sure.
So we really lacked heat units till we got up into July, and then did a lot of catching up in late July, early August. It was dry, but like I said, we still had subsoil moisture, and this crop didn't seem to suffer, you know, like.
No, well, you didn't lack heat at the end of the summer either. I was kind of watching how things were down there. It looked pretty hot to me. Hey, Wade, we got to run. Thank you so much. I've been talking to Wade down in Texas. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
No one has to explain stress to a farmer. That's like explaining a missed forecast to a weatherman. Now, Mother Nature stresses soybeans the way markets, bankers, and politics can stress you. But there's a proven way to reduce stress. With Preaxor fungicide, you'll see the difference. It decreases stress from disease, drought, hail, and heat, so your beans can focus on what matters most, better yields. Talk to your local rep about Preaxor fungicide and BASF plant health. Always read and follow label directions.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from Hypro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. Hypro, helping you spray better.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
We plant corn in Iowa, spray soybeans in Illinois.
We pull calves in Kansas, farrow hogs in Minnesota.
We raise rice in Arkansas, rye in Canada, and wheat everywhere in between.
We farm millions of acres across North America
and build every piece of Case IH equipment.
Built by farmers, for farmers. Case IH. Rethink productivity.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and it is Farmer Friday, taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show here. I've been talking to farmers really all across the continent of North America here today. Going to talk to Gary next. He's up in Ontario, Canada. Gary, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
So what's happening up your way?
Well, I'm just doing a little crop tour here and seeing how our soybeans are progressing. And it was definitely, like everybody else, a very late planting season. Went really dry as soon as got the crop in. Probably went a month and a half without any rain. Finally took a little bit of rain in mid-August to late August, and then went dry again till just yesterday. So it's been not going to be a very good corn crop, and soybeans are quite short, and going to be late.
Yeah. Are they starting to turn up your
harvesting? Pardon?
Are they starting to turn yellow?
There's some fields. We're probably 3 weeks away from anything coming.
Okay.
October 20th.
Yep.
We should, on a normal, early year, we typically would be cutting beans, late September, first of October.
Sure. Yeah, very similar to our area. And I know latitude-wise, we're pretty close. Your farm and ours aren't too far off.
Yeah, we're right on the southern tip of Lake Huron. That would be a little benefit for us as far as trying to get this corn crop mature. That's our biggest risk as far as we're concerned right now. It's going to be a crop insurance corn crop. Didn't get planted till June and then went dry, of course. And our biggest concern right now is going to be quality.
Yeah, we need some heat units. We've got a warm week coming up. What are they talking about for weather for you? Are you going to hit some 80s here coming up over the next week?
Yeah.
I'm talking Fahrenheit of course.
Right now we're 28 Celsius as I'm driving here.
Oh, awesome.
It's pretty warm right now, and we're calling for another warm week. So
Good.
But our corn is, like, I was out in the fields today pulling some cobs, and it's just starting to dent.
Yeah, so we...
It's going to be a little scary.
Yeah. And what's interesting this year, too, and a farmer that I was just out visiting with, they had flooding, and they couldn't get in the field, and they had some weeds coming through, and he was kind of hoping for a frost to kill these weeds off so he could harvest. And I said, don't be wishing for a frost yet. There's a lot of us that need a good another month here of fall if we're going to make it. Is that about what you'd say, too, another month, and you'll be in good shape?
We're definitely going to need till we figure out October 20th or something of that, frost-free.
Wow.
Our area could be, because we are so, we're just miles from the lake, that can keep it mild around here in the fall when the lakes get that warm.
Sure.
So that's where, you go a little further east of us, a little further away from the lakes, their frost dates are 10 days ahead of ours type of thing.
Wow. Yeah, they really do have a big impact on climate. I thought it was interesting. A number of years back, I was talking to somebody from Green Bay, Wisconsin, which in the United States, we think of Green Bay as being really, really cold. And he said, no, it's not really, really cold until the lakes get cold. And then he said it snows a lot and is super cold. So you're right. If we can keep that warm body of water there to keep things up a little bit, that's a good thing.
Yeah. But, it's going to be really close here as far as trying to get this corn into the maturity before a frost. It's we won't know for another month.
You said the beans were really short this year. How did weed control turn out? Did they fill in the rows and kind of keep the weeds out, or were weeds just a constant battle?
We're in a no-till, strip-till situation. We strip-till all our corn and no-till all our soybeans. We've been hit pretty hard with weed control as far as trying to get burn downs down and in crop. The wheat or the plants are short, and you start walking through fields, and there are a lot of little weeds coming up right now, because there's sunlight getting to the ground.
Yep.
Even in corn.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's been interesting. You guys have been just, like you say, wet, then dry. And it's been kind of a strange thing. We've been just wet the whole way through, and weeds have just been coming. They've never stopped here. And I was just wondering how it was for you, too. And the soybean thing, I've talked to quite a few guys that in different areas that said their beans were really short. And it seemed like you're right. That just let a little more sunlight through. And here we go. We catch these late rains. We get another flush.
Yeah, we didn't get our rains didn't come early enough to get that top cluster of pods either. So we're we're going to be in a 40, 45 bushel range for soybeans, which is, you know, quite a bit less than what we'd really like to see.
Yep. Well, good luck to you here this harvest, Gary. I know, sometimes getting out doing the crop tour is eye-opening when you see, man, it's not just me that's struggling, and it's a pretty good area that is. Hopefully the market figures that out at some point, that this crop isn't quite as exciting as what they think it is, and we get a little better prices too.
Yeah, I was just talking to my buddy. I got a buddy that I golf with in Florida in the wintertime from southern Minnesota there, and he's saying the same to beans. It took 4 inches of rain this week, and he says my fields are flooded, and corn's going to be 180. So we've been comparing notes all season.
Well, I can tell you this, Gary. I live pretty close to southern Minnesota, and those guys are wet. There's no question around it. Well, hey, Gary, good luck to you for harvest season here. Hopefully it does stay warm for you, and you make it to that October 20th frost-free, and everything turns out perfect.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Let's jump into the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
Okay, Henry sent in a comment. We were talking about, do farmers ever want a drought? And we said, boy, it sure be nice to have a drought while we're trying to combine. And he said, hey, I just finished combining my drought-stricken corn. I would have appreciated putting my combine on tracks and handling wet ground rather than losing money to the drought. Hey, good point. We don't want that drought to come too early. We only want it to be dry when we're trying to drive out in fields. Got a few different comments here from Brian, and we were talking about cover crops. And he had a comment on the drought thing too, and he said, I don't want a drought, just a dry spell. Good point. We might just want a dry spell for a little while, not necessarily a full-blown drought. But Brian had a couple other questions here. He said, first of all, he said, with residue breakdown, he said, if we're putting on manure from a pit, we've got nitrogen in there, and wouldn't that be helpful for breaking residue down? Also, that's going to hold some moisture in all that stover. Hey, I agree with you, Brian. We do that too. We put manure on quite a bit of our crop, and with that extra nitrogen there, that does seem to help with residue breakdown. So I would agree with that thought. He also says, when you're doing your cover crop, you mentioned that radishes don't support mycorrhizae fungi. Have you seen that on your farm? You know, we really haven't, Brian, from the standpoint of we're putting a blend out on our farm, so we're trying to avoid those issues. So while the radishes aren't going to support that particular beneficial fungi in our soil, we are putting out something with it, like oats, for example, that do support mycorrhizae fungi. And there's some handy charts, like at agphd.com. You can click on the agronomic resources tab, and it'll show you which crops are better than others for supporting the microbial life in your soil. Thanks for the questions. Got one from Myron here. He said, wouldn't it be better if you injected manure into the soil? Would that help build organic matter faster? Ooh, good point here, Myron. Using it on top of the ground, yeah, you're not going to build organic matter as much as if you put that manure beneath the soil. I agree with that. And plus, you're not going to lose any nutrients like sulfur and like nitrate, for example. You're not going to lose it. You're going to have less potential loss doing it that way as well. And of course, your neighbors will like you much better if you put manure underneath the soil so they don't have to smell it. That would be a good thought too. Hey, Myron, thanks for the comment. Really appreciate that. Boy, we had a fun show and it went really, really fast today. It was Farmer Friday, so we got to talk to a lot of folks around the country. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening today, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.